some percentage of consumers are not going back into dining rooms for a while, if ever. A lot of people have gotten used to doing the takeout and the delivery, going and picking up a nice bottle of wine, picking up some takeout, going home, having a meal in the comfort of their own home. And maybe they like that choice. Maybe they were never exposed to it before. And now that they've had that as an option, they like it and they're not going to go back to dining rooms. All right, and welcome back to the show. What is happening, everybody? Today is the 28th of May, 2020. This is episode 19 of the Food Service Distribution Podcast. I'm thinking about some things today. I wanted to dive into one important concept, or one unique concept that I've been thinking about a lot lately, and I think that it would be helpful for restaurant managers, owners, operators, distributors, anybody in the business to try and wrap their mind around this. And if I can plant this seed at least to try and get the wheels spinning, then it's more than worth it to take the time to go through this concept. Here's what it is. There is a gentleman by the name of Travis Kling, who is a he's the CIO of an asset management company that I respect a lot. I think they're very forward thinking, and he has come out multiple times talking about the coronavirus, COVID-19, being he's referring to it as the great accelerator. I'm sure other people have had similar takes, but I really started thinking about this. I've been consuming a lot of content lately from other podcasts that are similar to mine, a lot of restaurant-facing, distribution-facing podcasts. There's one I'm going to talk about in a little bit here that sparked a lot of this thinking as well. But people are trying to wrap their minds around how they get back to this normal place, new level of normalcy, and a lot more of what I'm aligning my thinking with and the people who I've really been impressed with are not thinking about, you know, how do we get back to what was working before, but what trends are being accelerated through this whole process and how do we capitalize on changing or adjusting our business to be better positioned on the other side of this thing, not doing what we did before, but doing what customers are going to expect, how the consumer needs are going to transition into, and what's going to set them apart and give them an edge over their competitors. So one of the main topics or one of the main thoughts here is just look around and what has been accelerated. What I've been doing, what you are probably doing a lot of the time or a lot more than before is working from home, okay? Most people are working from home. You see Zoom and Skype meetings and Teams meetings and all of that, at least at the distribution level, and maybe at the corporate level for a lot of restaurant chains, all of those meetings are taking place over in some sort of a digital format. And that is not something that is going to be temporary. I think that a lot of people will start migrating back to the office, but a very high percentage will continue to have a lot of their meetings and a lot of these, you know, instead of flying over to the East Coast or instead of going and driving 2 hours to do an in-person meeting, maybe you cut back and do those once a quarter, once every few weeks, and you start to do a lot more of these work from home and digital meeting type scenarios. Just looking across the entire, all industries in the United States and abroad, we're looking at so many changes of people getting put on more of a digital format or using digital platforms. And I don't see that as, I don't see it as a temporary trend. I see it as, you know, what Travis and what other people are referring to as this great accelerator. It's a transition from one, whether it be going from where we are today into something more along the lines of the information age and just getting into a more informational society, meaning things are done with, you know, more distance between people. We can cooperate with people further away distances without having to, without having to actually meet in person. So I think that trend's accelerating. I think if not, and I'm completely wrong, it might just it makes sense to at least wrap your mind around the concept and start thinking about how to position yourself nicely in case I'm right about this, or in case other people have been correct, assuming that this is a new era, a new digital era in ways. All right, so it brings me to my first question thinking about this is, how is your digital campaign? How is your presence online? And that might mean just a from a social media campaign. I have an earlier video where I talk about methods restaurants and small businesses can use to represent themselves better and more accurately online, and some tactics and methods that they can use to attract new customers, retain current customers, that type of thing. So how is your social media campaign? You should be thinking about that, making sure that people know that you're open and that this is what we're doing to combat the coronavirus. And, you know, here's pictures and videos of our chefs messing around. We use the TikTok app to do a early morning breakfast video, flipping omelets and things like that. Or just to make sure that you have a presence, make sure that you have a LinkedIn set up, a Facebook, Twitter, that somebody's engaging. If you need to hire a social media manager or somebody to manage those accounts for you, now would be the perfect time. Yesterday's the best time to do that, but today is just as good. Are you on mobile ordering? Do you have a, maybe not a mobile application, but do you have some way for people to access your website and ordering platform from their phone? So we're seeing that transition has already happened. Instead of people going online to check websites, they're browsing on their phones, they're browsing social media, they're clicking through from social media to a restaurant. You need to have some sort of presence. So if you don't have an app or a mobile ordering platform, you should at least be able to have your website and online ordering platform optimized for mobile use. Third is, do you have a website? Do you have your presence online? Is all of that already put in place? And if not, be thinking about that. Just look at your general online presence. Make sure that you're there. Make sure you're looking at it. Again, I'll put a link here somewhere to one of my past videos about social media marketing for restaurants. Go through it. There's a lot of helpful information. If you have direct questions, please feel free to reach out. I'd love to have a conversation about it. Second trend here, thinking about this great accelerator concept, is that takeout and delivery are not a trend. Those are here to stay as well. So it might be a few more weeks, a few more months where people are trying to figure out whether or not they're going to open the dining room. But the one thing that will come out of this is at least, I don't want to give a percentage, but at least some percentage of consumers are not going back into dining rooms for a while. If ever. A lot of people have gotten used to doing the takeout and the delivery, going and picking up a nice bottle of wine, picking up some takeout, going home, having a meal in the comfort of their own home. And maybe they like that choice. Maybe they were never exposed to it before. And now that they've had that as an option, they like it and they're not going to go back to dining rooms, especially now that there's this, you know, could be a virus, could be another outbreak, could be 10 years from now. We don't know how people are going to react to this and how that's going to change consumer behaviors indefinitely. So that's something to think about. Looking at trends. All right. Sorry, I just got a call. I had to send a voicemail. Restaurant footprints are going to be smaller. I think that is going to, what is happening right now are operators are realizing that they can produce as much, if not more, food out of a smaller footprint, having their dining room closed off, or maybe using portions of their dining room as staging areas for the third-party delivery services. And they have, 200 to 10,000 square feet that are not being used. So that's starting to connect the pieces here. Hey, if we are doing only takeout and only delivery and our sales are where they were or even higher, a lot of chains are reporting higher sales now with their dining rooms closed because they've been able to optimize their kitchens and working out of a smaller footprint, optimizing the takeout and the delivery aspects of their business. They're starting to wonder, do we need dining rooms? Could we experiment with maybe 100% of our businesses have dining rooms now? Could maybe we pull that back, open up some new locations that maybe 40% of the entire chain does not have dining rooms? And it's just a complete, like, think of a drive-through coffee stand or, think about a ghost kitchen type situation where you have these commissary kitchens that are set up that people prep the food in, and then they bring the food after it's prepped or close to being completely done. Maybe they just need a little bit of finishing, throw in an oven, heat up. So they start it in a commissary kitchen and they bring it off to other locations, or they get these third-party delivery services or their own in-house delivery services to pick up right from the kitchen and go deliver to the customer, to the consumer. So people are going to start thinking about that. And I think that smaller restaurant footprints are going to be a major trend coming out of this and way off into the future. Something to think about. Another piece here that was really cool. I have to give credit where credit is due. As always, there was an episode of the QSR magazine, their Fast Forward podcast. That's Sam Oakes, I believe it's the way you pronounce his last name. He recorded an episode with Portillo's CEO, Michael Asanlu, back in May 21st. And they talked about some of these concepts of what Portillo's is doing to navigate coronavirus, looking optimistic. What are they doing for their customers? What are they doing for their employees to take care of everyone? It's a really cool episode. I would highly suggest anybody look just... If you're listening to this, you're going to love that one. So I highly suggest go back and listen to it. But they talked about this one concept that I thought was pretty interesting enough to bring up here and explore a little bit. And that is the third-party delivery services versus self-delivery. Now, Portillo's has opted out of using third parties, like you know the DoorDash and Grubhub and Uber Eats and all of those third-party delivery services. For a couple of reasons, and they've gone over to their own internal delivery system. And the reasons were this. Right now, for the restaurant, and this was news to me, even for the provider or the delivery service provider, it's not profitable, right? So the Uber Eats and the DoorDashes, I don't want to single anyone out because they're all about the same, but they have very high high profit margins. Or they charge anywhere between, I believe it's 28 and 32% on top of what the bill is for delivering, okay? So for that last leg of the process. And if you can understand as a restaurant operator, you want between food cost and labor to be 60%. So you're left with that 40% of profitability every time that you, well, less than that actually, because you have to pay overhead and all the other components, taxes. But you don't have 30%. You cannot mark up a product or a even a full order 30% and expect that that's going to be sustainable. So it's not. It's not economically sustainable or feasible. I mean, thinking through that, there's no way that down the road, long term, that's going to be sustainable for anybody. I suppose what was surprising to me is that I didn't realize that it wasn't as sustainable for the provider as it was for the restaurant, but it makes sense. It makes sense on the surface as a business model, but with a industry like food service, like the restaurant business, where the margins are already so tight, you cannot add any sort of you can't add anything on top of it. It's not going to work. The second reason that I thought was really interesting was. And absolutely true is that he was referring to this as being not bad for the brand but off brand, right? So you want your customers to have a consistent experience from beginning to end. If they're going to eat your food, if they're going to dine in, if they're going to take out, go through the delivery, you want them to see your employees, their smiling faces. Right now, you want to see the gloves and the face masks and all of that. But you can manage the customer experience and expectation and what they pull away from your business the entire way through. But if you have some random person delivering the food the last leg of the way, and maybe they aren't wearing gloves or protection equipment, maybe they do something, they're dressed in a certain way, or they're just in a bad mood, having a bad day. Regardless of how the rest of that experience is, you can't control that, and you have no say in whether or not the customer who actually physically receives the food is going to either be turned off by the experience or turned on by the experience. And that is something that you absolutely want to have control of from beginning to end. So I thought that was interesting. I hadn't even really thought through the entire process. I just thought, somebody's going to deliver, they're going to leave it at the door. But yeah, if they're having a bad day or if they turn off the customer somehow, they're going to make an association with your restaurant based off of that. Or maybe it just took too long to get to them and the food's cold. That gives a bad, poor representation of what your food is all about. So that's something to think about. Those are the key pieces. I wanted to finish this with two thoughts, two other things that I'm thinking about today. And they're kind of off base from what we were originally talking about here. But there's a concept that I was thinking about earlier. I don't remember what sparked it, so I'm sure credit is due somewhere with this comment, but I do apologize. It's serve more than food. That was a concept that basically comes into customer experience and being able to identify and fulfill customers' new expectations and new needs. So you are a food service distributor or you are a food server from a restaurant at the restaurant level, and you want to make sure that you're taking every opportunity to have your employees be positive when they're interacting with customers, making sure your customer service levels are exceptional. Right now, more than ever, people need to be in a positive environment. So if they go into a stressful environment and people are running around stressful, in bad moods, serving food, that's going to reflect poorly on your business. Make sure that you're trying to keep that positivity up and that it's a place that they can go to be brought up and brought into a better mood. I know that's a lot easier said than done, but that's a high focus. And a lot of the reading that I've been doing and talking with customers, they're really trying to focus on how do we keep people positive. So just remember that. Just you're serving, you're providing positivity, or you're providing some sort of comfort, not just the food. There's another level to it. Okay. And second thing to think about. I've been building. I've talked about it in multiple episodes here. I've been building and thinking about this. You know, looking at your restaurant through the lens of a value investor. I'm sure you're sick of me saying that and you're wondering when's this video going to come out? Soon. It's going to be cool. But a concept that I was thinking through this morning is just how much sales are fluctuating, right? So we saw as far as a 70% dip in sales in March and into April, and we saw as much as a 100% increase in sales in less than a week in some of our chains and some of our one-off restaurants. So we're seeing these outrageous fluctuations. And while you're going through the process of making sure that you are profitable and that your labor costs, your food costs, and everything are where they need to be, make sure that you're managing your business and your balance sheet and your cash flow and make sure that you're looking at the percentages and not the dollar amounts. So you'll want to see top line. Did I do, you know, $6,000 in sales, or did I do $5,000 or $10,000 or wherever it is? That's great. But once you establish that initial number and you get that set point, then you want to work back with percentages. So an example of that, right? So I already kind of talked about where you would want your food cost and your labor. You want it at 60% or less. And an example would be if you had, say, in any period of time, I rounded to 10,000 just because it's an even number. It's easy to work with that number. Your sales are $10,000 and your food cost is 3,000 and your labor is 3,000. So your food cost is 30% of total sales and your labor is 30% total sales. So that's good. 60%. That's fine. That's something that you can operate in. You have one of these days where your sales drop to 5,000 and your food cost is 1,500. So you think, all right, my food cost is down. So that's fine. That reflects perfectly. I have 30% and your labor is $1,000 less than it was the day before at 2,000. And initially you would think, great, my labor went from 3,000. We cut it down to 2,000. That's fine. But when you look at how that translates into percentages, now your labor cost is 40%, and that gives a total food cost and labor cost of 70%, 10% higher than the day before with half the sales. So that's bad, right? You want to stay within that 60% zone. So just being able to think through that, and I know that's probably how you're already approaching it, but I've talked to some people who are not thinking as much in percentages and thinking a lot more in numbers, and it's a lot more... they get a lot more granular when you can figure out the overall health of your restaurant from day to day or your small business from day to day. If you just look at the loose percentages. Now, it's always worth it to dig in and to get more granular and to tear apart your balance sheet and to go through and make sure that everything's ticking with what your own personal goals are for your restaurant profitability. But to be able to, on the fly, look at sales from one day, look at how many servers you have, or look at how many people you have driving, look at an invoice from your distributor, understand percentages, where they are roughly, that's going to go a lot further, because then you just have the concept in your mind. You don't have to take out the calculator to understand whether or not you are close to where you need to be, ballpark, right? That's all I got. that's all I have for you. Thank you so much for watching or for listening. If you liked this and you found it valuable, please share it. Please subscribe to the YouTube channel. If you're watching, if you're listening, subscribe to wherever you're listening. And head over to Twitter. Give me a follow at Food Service Pod. My personal Twitter is at DM Late. And I'm always available for conversation or questions, or if you know somebody that wants to come on the show, whatever it might be, let me know. And as always, I'm going to put a recommended video right here, and you can subscribe right here. All right, that's it. Have an incredible afternoon. Get outside. What's it doing? It's like 70 degrees here in Washington. It's fantastic. I'm going to get outside and tip your waitress. Or your waiter, your food service person. Tip them. All right.